Okay, need to get going on the next panel. So this panel is entitled Malicious Abuse and Consumer Protection. It's in reaction to a strongly expressed interest to have those members of the law enforcement community, and I will say that I've observed over the past year to 2 years, an ever-increasing dialogue at these ICAM meetings with all of those concerned with issues of malicious abuse, but a useful and vigorous engagement by the law enforcement community to provide their perspective on the issues at hand here. So what we decided to do was to provide this half-hour session to those in the law enforcement community to provide a look at some of the things that they're seeing and some of the things that they would propose in order to deal with the increasingly serious situation related to cybercrime. So with that, we're going to begin with a presentation by Paul Hoare, who's the head of the operational arm of the E-Crime Directorate, the United Kingdom's Serious Organized Crime Agency, also known as SOCA. So with that, Paul, I think they're working to pull up the presentation, and there it is.
Thanks, Greg. Just like to express my thanks to ICAM for giving us this forum. We've got an awful lot to say, and 30 minutes isn't long to say it. So I will be whizzing through this. Hopefully, we'll be here all week, so we will be wanting to engage personally with you at all times. UK Minister stated a while ago that whilst the internet was a huge force for creativity and innovation, an observation that I share, there were other less savoury traits which the internet also lends aid to, which need to be recognised in a world where economies are based upon internet trade. Very pertinent comment, I feel. Law enforcement's involvement with ICANN, the regional internet registrars, TLDs and other internet governance has been growing over the past 2 years, as Greg has said. And law enforcement has become more globally joined up as well. Rob spoke this morning about ICANN being a global community. Well, I think law enforcement is as well in this area as well. To this end, law enforcement have arrived at ICANN conference with a set of proposed amendments that Bobby's mentioned already. And law enforcement is developing. A few short years ago, these proposals would never have been identified, let alone developed and submitted. Yet today we're welcomed by ICANN and carry the support of the Interpol and the G8 cyber working groups in our endeavours. There's quite a lot of countries to engage internet governance and change the landscape of criminality on the net. I tend to whistle through this, but give you a very short brief on the issues facing law enforcement and the current threats and issues, some of which have been touched upon already, which should demonstrate our need to engage industry assistance. And my colleagues from the FBI and the Swiss Police will add their perspective, submit some ideas for change. So here are some of the issues that face law enforcement efforts to bring cyber criminals to justice, issues that make the investigation of internet crime slow and resource intensive at best. And that's a model that doesn't accord with the speed in which criminals can move within the virtual world. Law enforcement globally cannot solve crime and reduce harm in the virtual environment alone. The global nature of the internet means that adding law to statute books within national boundaries may help particular countries' issues, but it can't address crime which respects and recognises no international borders. Bobby's already explained the issues of letters of request and the time they take to obtain legal process cross-jurisdictionally. Unfortunately, the three of us up here are bound by those restrictions, while criminals aren't. In order to effectively combat the threat to economies and national infrastructure caused by the phenomenon, regulation of the actual environment and the landscape itself needs to change. And only global bodies, which ICANN is one, with global influence and reach, can introduce the changes required to minimise criminal opportunity. Law enforcement supports the need for individual privacy on the net as much as anyone else, and we are bound by, certainly we're bound by the European Convention of Human Rights, where we're duty-bound to respect people's individuality and their privacy. But there can't be complete anonymity and an amnesty for criminals to act with impunity within the virtual stage. Just going back to what was talked about on the last panel, the anonymity issue is not just about whether people register incorrect details. It's what sanctions are taken against individuals and companies that register incorrect details and how quickly those sanctions are are in place. I'd like to show some examples of the current crime picture and how the regulatory structure assists criminal enterprise at present. Right, let's talk about Makolo, first of all. I'm sure, undoubtedly, you're aware of Makolo. It's a bulletproof hosting service based in San Jose. I should mention here, certainly from a soccer perspective, bulletproof hosting services are a major threat. They're created to provide a protective shell wherein criminal gangs can work without fear of being taken down by law enforcement or industry complaints. We've seen a sliding scale of payments to bulletproof hosters directly related to how many abuse complaints you get. So the more abuse complaints are made about you, the more you pay for the protection that they provide. This service was removed after the media asked questions of the upstream transit provider, as the reputation of Makolo was at a level where mainstream media was alerted, and the threat of reputational damage to the upstream transit provider became clear. Interesting, the first fall of the Russian business network coincided with an article of outing at the RBN and the Washington Post. Now, I talk about Makolo to demonstrate the level of crime we're dealing with. You may have seen this picture before. This is Makolo's rack space. There's nothing unusual in the rack space, as you see here, although considerable time and money has gone into setting up the infrastructure and the working routing services. It's only when we delve deeper into the use of the servers that the extent of the criminal activity becomes clear. Here's how Makolo put the servers to use, and I'll just let you take that in just for a second. Ladies and gentlemen, these people are not individual script kiddies and the hackers of yesteryear. This is organised crime for enormous financial gain to the criminals and loss to your governments and companies, and they're very clever. They know exactly how the infrastructure of the internet works and what your policies are and how to use them against everybody. They're abusers of the policies rather than users. The scale of the problems that these services cause can best be illustrated by the impact that was achieved by Makolo's shutdown. Spam traffic dropped for about 60% for 2 or 3 days after Makolo was de-peered, and that's a major impact. Law enforcement were well aware of Makolo, but we couldn't do anything about it. The upstream provider wouldn't respond, and it couldn't be done without conviction or a legal process. That can't go on. On the domain name side, the takedown of Estimains as a registrar has significant impacts on a multiplicity of criminal attacks. I'd like to take the opportunity of thanking ICANN and acknowledging and welcoming the prompt intervention of ICANN in responding to terminating Estimains following the conviction of Vladimir Tsatsin in Estonia. However, it's the only criminal revocation at present, to my knowledge, and it still required a criminal conviction to initiate the process. As I've already highlighted, in some cases it's not possible to convict, and even when available, the time taken to secure a conviction is an extended one, and it means that people like Estimains can stay up for years, rogue registrars like Estimains stay up for years and cause immeasurable damage. Right, this slide illustrates just how one serious organised crime gang and their associates used Estimains domains to host their websites and online forums, selling compromised credit cards. Some of these forums have 10,000 members, so you can imagine the issues with actually getting out and arresting 10,000 people, even if they all queued up and put their hands up, which doesn't happen. And their associates used Estimains domains to host their websites and online forums, hacking tools and malware. All of these domains are registered falsely. False details, difficult for law enforcement to track, not only to track down the people behind them, but also to disrupt their blatantly criminal activity. That's the Torpig CNC controller. It's important to understand it's not just criminal ISPs and domain registrars that are the problem. Criminals also make widespread use of legitimate registrars, and the lack of controls many exert on domain registration. Criminal kits such as Torpig, which is also known as Sinowile or Ansarin, is a complex and highly sophisticated attack system with a primary function of stealing passwords, online banking details and credit and card data. The whole Torpig infrastructure is reliant on the domain name system to function. Its infection mechanism, its botnet command and control, its drop servers and the infection servers all use domain names to ensure the stability of the Torpig internet. Each computer infected by Torpig automatically connects to a command server with a pre-assigned domain name. The domain name itself is generated by an algorithm hardwired into the bot code. And the domain name and of the command server and the associated drop zones change every 20 minutes according to a pre-programmed sequence. This makes it virtually impossible for law enforcement or industry to keep up with the amount of domains that are being fed through. It's important to know that these kind of things are bought in their thousands. These domain names bought in their thousands and with a string of characters that mean nothing. That must raise some issues. The Rockfish and the Avalanche attack systems. Rockfish have been the market leaders in phishing, as Rod would have told you, since they arrived on the scene in 2005. And Avalanche are currently the big kid on the block. The APWG's notes from the yearly report that 24% of current global phishing attacks use the Avalanche kit. Rock pioneered the use of fast flux techniques and later employed double flux to prevent security companies from deregistering Rockfish's command and controls. One that's become much copied was Rockfish's, again, use of the algorithmically generated domain names. Rockfish attacks literally use thousands of domain names, all of which contain an alphanumeric sequence preceded by well-known online banking brands. That must, again, raise some issues. Obviously, and here's the crux of the problem, false details are submitted, combined with very limited due diligence, when registering domains, and as they only last a few hours, these domains are either free or paid for by stolen credit cards. And by the time the domain name registrar realises he's been scammed, the domain has already been discarded and replaced by a new one. I should point out that many, many registries and registrars do carry out some robust, responsible checking and the auditing of their customers. But without a baseline regulatory system, which we all must abide by, criminals will and do simply migrate to less protected areas. I've taken up too much time, doing this, I apologise, but it is a mammoth area, and 30 minutes isn't very long. What I will appeal for before I hand over to Adrian is we do need your support and assistance, and would appeal for both. Again, we're here all week. Please come and approach us. Adrian.
Thank you, Paul. I'd like to introduce Adrian Koster, who's a lawyer with the Swiss Cybercrime Unit. So, Adrian, over to you.
Yeah, thank you. As a chairman of the ICANN board, Thrush, said this morning, consumer protection and consumer trust needs to be adequately addressed. So a part of this trust is that if something happens, the actor will not get away or will probably not get away. Law enforcement tends to be limited to the territory they are in, so they have borders. Otherwise, the internet community is global. So law enforcement thinks first of jurisdiction and applicable law. And if we have to work together internationally, we have to follow legal process, which usually takes time. The internet community establishes policies which can be enforced by themselves, so they can make up their own terms and conditions. But it's up to the internet players to enforce these policies that they establish. It's their responsibility, and they can also limit liability within what they are doing or what services they provide. Law enforcement can help the internet community by announcing suspicion of malicious conduct, but therefore we need contact. And if you wait to act until a court ruling, then it's often too late because there are dangers emerging, especially from, for example, from phishing, that needs to be addressed in a timely, sensitive matter. In my experience, with clear cases, it's usually no problem. You can announce it to the relevant player, and they will take action. Usually concerns child abuse or phishing, which is clear. Then, but if you have other websites, for example, which advertise scareware, so fake antivirus, or that are promoting or so looking for recruiting money mules, then it gets a bit more difficult, and many players have liability concerns. But as I've said, you can state in your terms and conditions that you limit your liability if there is a suspicion of malicious conduct. Well, to bring up a quite concrete idea to the community, if you have a suspicion of a malicious conduct, a registrar could block the name server indication to the website, and then ask for identification. And usually, then it's already over, because criminals will not provide correct identification. If they do, then you can announce this back to law enforcement, and law enforcement can start to investigate. So, but this process would need to be written in the terms and conditions, but that is up to the registrars how they will treat this kind of cases. Well, finally, I would like to make the point, as well as like Paul, that we all have to work together for a safe and secure internet, because if we don't work together and exchange information, then we will not achieve this goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adrian. And the last speaker, in returning to Bobby Flame from the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Thank you, Greg. Although you have different accents up here, you're really hearing the same message, which is fighting crime and trying to prevent crime. The FBI is just one of 18,000 law enforcement agencies within the United States alone. And just to give you a little sobering statistic, a very small fraction of the calculable loss and damage from just our caseload concerning cybercrime involving DNS abuse was $1.8 billion. So you can only imagine the magnitude of the loss and damage that is out there on the internet. And like I said, we are just one of 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States alone. I will echo everything that my law enforcement counterparts have said. I would like to wrap up by stating that we have gotten together, in addition to the Australian Federal Police, the New Zealand Police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Paul has mentioned that we've also conferred with the G8 and the Interpol Working Group, and we've come up with some due diligence. We actually came up with three principles. None of it is new. You've heard it from the AG, the Anti-Phishing Working Group. You've heard it here again today with Greg and the verification. But there's three principles, and our principles are: number one is due diligence. We want to make sure that the registries and registrars and registrants out there are who they say they are. They're not criminals. And the people who are in charge of the companies which administer the DNS are doing the due diligence to make sure that it's a robust system with the most accurate and honest information that can possibly be on there. Second principle is something that we've, again, discussed many times in the who is, to have an accurate who is. It's one of our integral tools in beginning any investigation. Many of you use it as well. The big question, obviously, and I think it's what everything boils down to, is cost. And there has to be some way that we, you know, come to some conclusion on how we can address that, because it's a hurdle that we need to overcome if we're going to really be doing our jobs and making sure that the internet is safe and secure. I'm a big proponent of capitalism. No one should bear the cost. No registry, no registrar should bear that cost in and of themselves. It's something that we have to make sure it's done, and obviously the devil's in the details. The third principle is transparency and accountability, which is something that ICANN is very concerned about. We want to make sure that everyone who is on the DNS system, who is administering the internet system or the DNS system, is who they say they are. So we want to make sure everyone's complying with the contracts. We want to make sure the registry, the registrar, the resellers, ICANN, law enforcement, everyone is doing their part and making sure that everything is above board and we know exactly who we're dealing with. So that being said, I think what we're just trying to tell you today in the message is that it's an international problem, something you already know, but you've heard some specific examples. And the examples that Paul gave you today regarding Mokolo and rockfish, those aren't just in the United Kingdom. They're in the United States, they're in Canada, they're in Europe, they're in Asia. So we have to combat it as one. So I think that's all I have to say for today, but welcome any comments and questions.
Right. So I do think we have a short window for any sort of comments or questions from the audience for our law enforcement representatives up here. Do we have anybody who would like to make a comment or a question? We got one. It's my fault. Can we get the question again on the microphone?
Sorry, Paul Foody. The question is there any legitimate reason why someone would want a domain name immediately? Is it not possible to say, right, you register a domain, it's going to take a week to get it operational, and then you can do all the checking, and you stop these sort of systems that swap domain names every 20 minutes?
My understanding, and others in the room may be able to amplify Dave Piscitello specifically, is in some of the analysis of Fast Flux that there were found to be legitimate operational reasons for very short-lived domain names. So it's not a clear situation that all fast-changing domain names. Now, that said, the characterization of, you know, when this is particularly malicious or not is a challenge to all of those in the cybersecurity and, you know, incident response community to try to figure out that. But I think there is some evidence that there are rationales. Dave, do you want to, if you have any amplifying on that, why don't you grab the mic for just a moment?
Well, we're conflating two different issues. With something like Fast Flux, what you're actually doing is changing DNS configuration information very quickly, not swapping in and out domains. One of the things that we are trying to learn a little bit more about is understanding whether or not we can ascribe a reputational value to a domain based on how long it's been registered. So we are studying that and trying to understand whether the industry and anti-spam measures and anti-phishing measures can actually assign or a weight of a domain based on how long it's been. But even that can be arbitraged, because if the bad guys know that this is what we're going to do, they'll register domains now and hold on to them for a year. And, you know, they have plenty of money because they're spending hours. So we have to figure out a way to just keep ahead of them.
Thanks. You both. Paul?
Just to come back at Dave there. We've discussed this quite in depth at work and across global law enforcement, in that do you not do something because it's not going to last very long? These people are very, very clever, they're very technically savvy, they will adapt. I don't see that as an argument for not actually disrupting them while you can. You wouldn't let a burglar in your house because he's going to get a key cut. We need to do whatever we can now.
Thank you.
Yes, Jonathan Zook from the Association for Competitive Technology. Law enforcement is obviously a very complex thing. It involves a lot of alliances between law enforcement agencies, different laws in different jurisdictions, sovereignty issues, et cetera, et cetera. And so what I wonder is if there's some way to bring this into the context of ICANN and what its actual jurisdiction, if you will, is, and ask the question, if there was one thing this organization could do to make your jobs easier, what would it be?
I think you're exactly right. It's a very complex issue. The jurisdiction of ICANN. There's nobody in the world who can issue global law that can actually influence the internet and cover all the internet, which is why we reach out to industry bodies and ICANN and industry itself, because it's the codes of practice and the self-regulation that are the actual keys to the to this, to how to deal with this. On the point of self-regulation, certainly the UK government are very pro-co-regulation, but self-regulation works if industry bodies regulate their members. If their members can opt out of that regulation, that's not self-regulation, that's no regulation.
Bobby?
To answer your question, I would say that, you know, we would need to give ICANN more teeth, and I think one of the high security zone verification program, if that would be a standard, not opt-in, but an actual standard, I think that would be a very good start.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, okay, my question is related to this issue of sovereignty. The speaker from Switzerland mentioned that law enforcement works within a national territory, but the criminals are working globally. The Cybercrime Convention of the Council of Europe has, in Article 38 following, opened the door for a new level of international cooperation. Do you see this is the right way, so that you open new spaces for law enforcement to investigate also outside national borders in due time?
Yes, the international community or the community of states are working on cooperation, on getting laws passed, getting conventions passed, and getting closer together. But that all takes huge amount of time until it's implemented. You already have all the means to encounter problems. If you as a registrar or as a hosting provider, if you get to know that your services are abused, you can make an announcement to law enforcement, to local law enforcement, and they will follow it up. Maybe not every time it will lead to a conviction, but it's a start. And if a registrar consequently announces malicious conduct, then it will not be used by criminals anymore, so you can clean out your own house. And I think that's what the industry should do, because when you can announce it to law enforcement, but if law enforcement states something, they have to do investigation, they have to do subpoenas, and all the data is protected by data protection law and privacy laws. But if you if you state that your service is abused, then you can take all the data and you can provide it to law enforcement so they can start an investigation. And this is way quicker than it's the other way around. And also, if you would happen to be a Swiss registrar, you could announce it to us. And then when we find out that it's an IP in the United States, I can hand it over to Bobby, because law usually allows to send data across borders if it's capable to start an investigation there. So it's if the chain starts with the announcement of a private person who has data which can be used for prosecution, then this data can be passed along. But if you have to roll up the chain from behind, then it's all about legal process, data protection, and privacy protection, and that is very hard to encounter in a timely manner.
Hi, I'm Christina Rosette. I represent the intellectual property constituency on the GNSO Council, but I'm speaking individually. First, I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to be here. It was extraordinarily informative, but frankly, terrifying. So, given that we have a limited set of tools here at ICANN that we can use, namely contracts and contractual relationships, do you have any specific recommendations, perhaps kind of coming off of those three principles, whether it would be for the new GTLD contracts, whether it's for existing registry contracts, whether it's for the RAA?
I think when we approach this, what we didn't come to is to come to a draconian law enforcement, here's the regulation that you must have, because that's not the way to approach it. What we would advocate and what we'd really like to see is a minimum standard for everybody to come up to. Security on the internet is pitched by its lowest common denominator. The criminals will migrate to the area that has the least security. So I think what we'd like to see more than anything is the standards, within the principles that we've advocated, to have a minimum standard. Now, I know that's difficult and that will cause, it causes financial issues and resourcing issues to some people, but if we want to have a safe internet, then minimum standards of accuracy of data, the auditability of data, the transparency, the handing over of material to law enforcement, that's what we'd really like to see. And I know it's not easy, but it's an appeal from the heart because it's very difficult, our job. If I can just talk about it, it's sitting and talking to you guys, your august technical body, I can explain Rockfish to you, hopefully you got it. If you try and imagine him explaining that to 12 good men and true of a jury, It's virtually an impossible task.
Thank you.
Any other panelists on that? Okay, let's keep quick. Let's try to keep the questions quick.
My name is Kim. I'm from Korean National Police Headquarters. I'm just curious about this, you know, the due diligence. Is this supposed to give civil or tort liability to the registry or registrar? Or is it just for a recommendation and you don't really have to enforce this to those registries and restaurants? And the second question is, I've seen in many cases in Korea, the domain names are sold and bought and sold by the registrars who's not accredited by the ICANN, who is like, you know, dealing some of their private businesses in, with the so, you know, they deal with the CCTLD registries in other countries like Romania. And do you have any countermeasures on this kind of not even the registrar level business owners, which is currently existing in everywhere in the world? Thank you.
With the due diligence, we're referring to number one, ICANN, and this kind of answers your second question as well. ICANN doing due diligence on who they accredit as a registrar and also registry, but basically a registrar to make sure, Paul mentioned S-domains, to make sure you're not having criminals running a registrar and to making sure that they are who they say they are and they're a capable business who can, you know, register domain names. We also talking about due diligence insofar as the registrar vetting out the registrants, which means validating the data that the registrant is providing. So that's what we're referring to when we say due diligence. And we can talk, since you're a cohort, we can talk more about that later on.
Thank you, Bobby. Two more, Thomas.
So I think I've heard a lot of very well-intentioned statements here today, but there is one that makes me shiver, and that is the phrase of the safe internet. The internet is a general-purpose network. There will not be a safe general-purpose network, just like there will not be a human language in which you cannot lie. And I think we need to be extremely careful here that we don't lose sight of the trade-offs that we are making. The value that is derived out of this network comes, among other things, from economic activity that requires very little investment, very low transaction costs in setting up things, $6 domain names, $30 hosting contracts, and all that. And I can make a couple thousand bucks, I can build a business, I can grow it. I can do that in the legitimate area, and I can do it in the illegitimate area. At the same time, I'm not going to be able to apply the Know Your Customer rules that are designed for transactions above, say, $10,000 to transactions on the scale that enable setting up a business, be it criminal or be it legitimate. I think we need to be careful, really, really careful, that we don't start making trade-offs that say, let's make this network safe and that throws out the fundamental utility that this network has for economic activity, for social activity, for science, and for human progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas.
Can I just address that slightly? I know that you're not going to make the internet safe, but where you live, the local police can't make your neighbourhood entirely safe, but that doesn't stop them from trying, and you wouldn't actually want them to stop trying to make you safe within that environment. Likewise, if you take it away from the internet arena, people register in their own countries and they make money outside the internet arena. There's nothing to stop people handing over their right name and address when they actually register a company or they register a domain. I do appreciate that there are restrictions on that, and far be it from me certainly to sit here and stifle the innovation of the internet. It's been a wonderful thing, but realistically, we're getting to the stage now where that innovation and that economic imperative is endangered by the amount of losses that are the companies and governments are taking. When critical national infrastructure is based upon the internet, then there's got to be some kind of safety within it. That's a personal view.
Bruce, you have the last question.
Thank you. I guess I'll just start with a little bit of analogy and then ask some questions. So the analogy, I work for a registrar, so I just want to kind of give a perspective. It's a bit like operating a supermarket, and most people that go to a supermarket buy ingredients to cook something at home. So they will buy some food, ingredients, but they can also buy knives. And in a lot of countries, and certainly in Australia, there is an issue with young people being able to buy a knife, because it doesn't cost very much. You can buy a knife for probably a couple of dollars, but you can do huge damage with that. You can kill someone, essentially. But most supermarkets, because the 90% or 99% of people coming in there, a supermarket operator doesn't want to put a security cordon out the front and say, look, we need to check your ID before you can come into the supermarket, and you need to prove who you are. Because most people are wanting the convenience of being able to go to the supermarket, get what they need to do their cooking and go home. That's the same with most registrars. Most people come to us, they want a very simple interface to come in. They want to get the tools and equipment that they need to operate their small business or their website. And so then it's a balance between, so what does a supermarket do for security? One of the things it does is probably put in cameras, because they know there's a certain degree of shoplifting that happens in that supermarket. Just as registrars, there's a certain degree of domain names that get registered, and they're using false and stolen cards. And probably knives that get used for crime will probably get stolen as well, rather than necessarily bought. But there's a certain degree of that. So what a supermarket does is it probably puts a security guard in the shop, particularly a large supermarket, because they're looking for shoplifting, looking for people doing bad things. And so registrars can have a security and an abuse team that sort of monitors and tries to do things. The other thing a supermarket can do is put video cameras and try and identify who's coming in and out of that supermarket. So if a crime happens, the police can go, hey, someone got knifed down the street, do you have any record? And they go, oh, yeah, we've got this video. But the ICANN environment is that video camera's online, which you wouldn't really do in a supermarket environment. And because that video camera's online, people then put hoods over their heads and wear motorbike helmets and things like that, so they can't be seen, which is essentially the proxy private registration environment. So you've got to look at the whole system, and there's a number of problems with that. If you can have recommendations that are some minimum things that a registrar should do, so the equivalent of a security guard, the equivalent of the video camera, some sort of minimal level of security, but it doesn't impact the average user coming in. The average user is not really aware that there's a security guard there, not really aware that there might be a camera there. They come into the supermarket, come out and get their goods. But bad actors may well be aware of that. But on the other hand, you've got to have in such a way that people don't feel that their privacy is going to get invaded by that. So, we're not taking photocopies of your ID as you come into the shop. We're not putting the security footage online for everybody to access, which is what we do with WHOIS. So we've got to get that balance right. And I think as supermarkets, if there's a crime, there's obviously procedures that the police can come in there and say, we want to review that video footage. And I'm sure that by and large they cooperate with you. We do need to go to another level, though. And the real problem that we need to solve here is the international border problem. And I think that's something that's really useful to bring to ICANN and bring to the registrars and say, well, how could you accredit somebody that, like I'm based in Australia, how can you accredit someone that's in the UK that's able to actually get our security footage? Because if we can think about how to get security footage, we have it. We do have security footage, the equivalent of it. You know, we have log traces of IP addresses. We have a lot of that data. We've got no real processes for how to deal with that other than with our own local law enforcement. And you're talking about an issue that we're across borders. The internet's wider than borders. And that's one of the biggest problems I think we should put the effort into, is how to make the security footage available. Obviously not available to everybody, but available to those that should rightfully have it. And what are the minimal levels of security we should have on our door? What's the equivalent of a security guard and the cameras and a few other things? But don't create a system that's so hard for people even getting the door of the supermarket, which actually stops people getting online. And that's not what we want to do.
I think we're going to call this a wrap. I really want to thank everybody. It's amazing to me this panel is now approximately half an hour long, that this room is still pretty full, especially since there's an important reception going on. To me, this indicates what's become a very important process, which is the increased engagement by the law enforcement community to provide information about the dimensions of challenges they face and to engage the broader ICANN community in solutions. I think we also saw the community say, please bring, you know, recommendations for things that we can do to us and into the fray of what are the right policies, how do we implement things like new GTLDs in the right way. So I'd like to thank everybody in the audience, but have the audience thank the panelists for their